WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The sound in Los Angeles Friday, where police used tear gas to disperse demonstrators. The group was protesting citywide immigration enforcement action. More than 40 people were taken into custody. Mayor Karen Bass criticized the federal immigration tactics.
It happened multiple places in the city, and what it does is that it sows a sense of terror throughout the community.
Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the Maryland man mistakenly deported by the Trump administration to El Salvador, is back in the U.S., but he's back in federal custody, facing two federal counts linked to a human smuggling ring. His attorney called the charges preposterous. President Trump told reporters Friday he's not interested in talking to Elon Musk as the two continue their high-profile falling out. And two people in custody in connection with what authorities say was a plot to carry out a shooting at a high school graduation in Michigan. This is ABC News. Mohammed Suleiman, the man suspected of throwing a Molotov cocktail at a group raising awareness for Israeli hostages in Boulder, Colorado, made his first appearance in federal court on Friday. He is facing one federal hate crime charges. He faces 118 state counts. A former Arkansas police chief is back in custody, says ABC's Alex Stone.
The hunt for Grant Hardin went on for nearly 2 weeks, and in the end, he was captured just over a mile away from the prison grounds where he escaped from. Hardin is an ex-police chief who was convicted of rape and murder. He was known as a devil in the Ozarks. After being recaptured, his identity was confirmed through fingerprints. Arkansas's Department of Corrections says he is now back in custody. Alex Stone, ABC News.
Brad Marchand scored the game-winning goal in double overtime as the Florida Panthers beat the Edmonton Oilers 5-4 to even the Stanley Cup final at a game apiece. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Positive psychology coach Kira Sabin, it is great to have you back.
I love the idea of self-help, but there's also something called community help. We have become so divided, we've forgotten that our neighbor is really nice and makes great cookies and probably has the same concerns on a daily basis that you do. I think that we think things have changed, and I think we're just have stopped talking to each other.
Catch the Todd Allbaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. The John and Gordy Show.
We have quite a selection of hearing aids. They've got Bluetooth, of course, and AI. We're Android robots.
You've been assimilated into the Borg.
We are into the Borg. Be kind of cool.
The Borg hearing aid.
If they haven't, we should latch onto that. The John and Gordy Borg hearing aid devices at a special discount.
Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. As federal electric vehicle incentives face potential rollbacks, a new study is highlighting the burden of gasoline costs on Black and Latino drivers. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
The Fuel Equity Report shows Blacks and Latinos are super users of gasoline, spending on average 15% of their paycheck to fuel their cars. The median household income for Blacks and Latinos in Wisconsin is between $31,000 and $46,000. Dr. Shelley Francis with EV Hybrid Noir says systemic factors like disinvestment in public transportation, economic segregation, and long commute times all contribute to the disproportionate impact.
They're also more likely on average to be driving these older, less fuel efficient cars due to income as well as financing barriers that they may experience.
The study says EV adoption could save Blacks and Latinos an average of $4,900 a year on fuel and maintenance, but barriers like affordability, charging access, and education persist. The report found the top 10% of Black and Latino gasoline users are generally concentrated in smaller cities and rural areas. The study suggests targeted policies to encourage equitable adoption of EV for Black and Latino communities, including enhancing purchase incentives, expanding financing options, and increasing charging infrastructure in communities where top gasoline users live. Francis says addressing the big misinformation gap about EVs is also crucial.
pushing more of those types of stories out there to show like the everyday driver. It's not some fancy person living out in a castle somewhere. It's just regular folks who are trying to work, make ends meet, and provide for their families.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
More news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly sunny, 79. Slight chance of a thunderstorm this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 56. Showers and storms are likely for Sunday with a high near 76. Sunday night, clear, 52. Showers and storms return for Monday.
Right now, it's 62.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. State Senator Kelda Royce will be here with our weekly Joint Finance Committee update, as well as headlines from Wisconsin Watch. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. A voice for Madison. Real news and great conversation. 92.7 WMDX. Welcome to Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Civic Media's weekly review and discussion of some of the most significant news stories in the areas of law, government, courts, and the aspiration for justice. And now, here's your host, Jim Santel.
This is Amicus, a law review on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel, and I am your host on this broadcast, both this hour and next hour as well. This is, as always, our weekly weekend wrap-up, our review, our analysis, our examination of those major stories in the area of the delivery of justice, in the area of the rule of law, and yes, also in the area of government operation, all of those things intertwined here on the broadcast when we analyze as a friend of the community, as a friend of understanding and comprehension of these major issues in our times. All of that coming up this weekend on Amicus, a law review. As always, you can be a part of our discussion here on our broadcast by calling in or texting in at 855-752-4842. That number once again is 855-752-4842. You can also be a part of our discussion by dropping to me and my producer Max a comment, a question, an inquiry about the subject matters that we are going to be addressing this weekend on our broadcast. They are many. And yes, indeed, as always, it is a lot. It has been, as it always seems to be these months and even these years, a very busy week in the area of rule of law issues, events, circumstances, decisions, hearings, and on and on. Let me tell you a little bit about what we're going to attempt to cover in the next 2 hours here on our broadcast. We are necessarily going to be covering at the top of our discussion this major news breaking just on Friday of this past week, having to do with deportations. An issue that we have talked about since March 15th, going back 3 months, that is, the issues related to the deportations of Venezuelans and other residents, other people here in this country, deported to other places around the world, including especially that high security prison in El Salvador. We're going to be talking not only about those events, but also something that happened in a federal district court in the District of Columbia just this past week. That is the courtroom of Judge James Boasberg. He's the chief judge of the district court there. We'll tell you exactly what he said as he and other judges continue not only to be frustrated. Frustration doesn't begin to approach the level of dismay, of disappointment, and of condemnation that courts are now sending in the direction of the White House and in particular the Department of Justice as the constitutional crisis, which we have been in now for a long period of time, continues unabated and unresponded to by this administration. Judge Boasberg consistently since March 15th asking, demanding, requiring that this government, our government, my president, my attorney general, and yours as well, provide basic information about who these people are, who were deported way back on March 15th? What is their status? And most importantly, what is the government going to be doing to bring them back, to provide the due process that, yes, indeed, the Supreme Court has commanded they be afforded? We'll talk about what Judge Boasberg did just this past week in this continuing, not just stalemate, but crisis in America, having to do with the interplay between the rule of law and people, yes, indeed, among those people, my president and my attorney general, who have said that district court judges have no power in addition to doing name calling. We'll talk also in passing about other judges also on the precipice of finding this administration in contempt, further underscoring the constitutional crisis. That's Judge Paula Zinnes in Maryland. You know well that case. That is the one involving, yes, Mr. Abrego Garcia. We're going to be spending a principal portion of our time in this first hour talking all about the stunning events having to do with Mr. Abrego Garcia and, yes, his return to the United States of America late this past week, now facing a criminal indictment returned by a federal grand jury in Tennessee. We'll talk all about that. We're going to delve into exactly what that indictment says. We're going to hear from our attorney general as she describes what this is all about and takes some questions about the motive, the reason why now, after all of this, a period of time when the government has said that they cannot and will not abide by Judge Zinnes' orders, now they have not only returned him to this country, indicating that they've got the capacity to do that all along, but also the predicates for doing so. We'll talk about that indictment and the things that our attorney general said that are highly troubling, not only in violation of the press and media policies, but also once again about the attempts by this administration, by this White House, by this Department of Justice to undermine the basic respect and duties that all of us have to the Constitution. We'll talk about something chilling that she said with respect to what justice means under this administration. We necessarily need to make reference as well to a judge named Stephanie Gallagher. She has likewise expressed outrage over the inability of this administration to return another deportee named Christian. We'll talk once again about Judge Brian Murphy. He is the Massachusetts district judge who has also expressed outrage by the failure of this administration to provide some 8 admittedly convicted criminals with the due process they were entitled to before shipping them off to places around the globe, not their places of origin. All of that in connection with this major continuing rule of law, justice delivery, justice non-delivery issue having to do with deportations in America. It has been a busy day or so. In addition, it has been a busy day, not just at Maine Justice, not just in a district court in the District of Tennessee, but also right down the street on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C., where your Supreme Court has been equally busy, if not even more so, issuing not one, not two, not three, but 4 major decisions just in recent days. Yes, indeed, this is that period of time. This is the era every single year when the Supreme Court begins to issues these major decisions in many cases that affect our lives and our livelihoods. We'll talk about a case involving Mexico and whether its lawsuit against the manufacturers of firearms in America can and cannot proceed. We'll talk about an important employment discrimination case involving majority and minority populations, how that plays into something called the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and Title VII of that important law. We'll talk about a Catholic charity right here in Wisconsin that is now going to get tax-exempt status by virtue of what the Supreme Court has said in that area. Those cases, those decisions, perhaps not the easy ones, but nonetheless, those the unanimous decisions, 9-0 decisions in all of those cases, which we will review. And then there is the big one, which is going to start a review of the Supreme Court on this this broadcast, and that has to do with the Musk team. As always, I do not refer to them as Doge, notwithstanding that that is the shorthand way that the media and others have continued to refer to what Musk has done inside our government, because this is not a department. And even though there is some special employment status, they have not got the status of a department inside our government. Nonetheless, they have been given huge amount of access, and indeed access to the most private and important and sensitive documents of all Americans. This past week, the United States Supreme Court, in yet another application, another emergency application in what we have called the shadow docket, once again, the United States Supreme Court hands Donald Trump and hands Elon Musk, even as he is apparently no longer there himself, the entity called the Musk team, that's my description of it, continues to do its work, even in the midst of this more than small spat between Musk and Trump. Putting that calamity and that embarrassment to one side, the Supreme Court's decision basically affording access by this non-department, non-official group of people who are parading through our private documents, not only the Social Security Administration, which is the focus of this case, but also having sought access to Internal Revenue Service documents, moving from one agency to the next, demanding access to all these materials. We will talk about what is perhaps, at least for this week, notwithstanding the seriousness and importance and gravity of those other decisions involving Mexico and employment discrimination and Catholic charities, notwithstanding the significance of those cases, we will place at the top of the list the significance, the calamity of this unsigned three-paragraph order, non-substantive, not giving reasons, but simply saying we're granting the application of this administration, of the Solicitor General, John Sauer, permitting this Musk team to continue to rampage through the documents, the information, get access to Social Security information as they have been doing until recently, when lower district court and federal courts have said no. There's a thing called the Privacy Act. There are structures inside the Social Security Administration put there at the time of the formation of that agency to ensure that your safety and your security, your privacy is safeguarded. Now the Supreme Court, and yet another one of these unsigned, unexplained decisions, has permitted Trump and Bondi and the Musk employees to continue to get access to your Social Security information. We're going to talk not only about what is not there, which is nothing from the Chief Justice or the others who supported that. We'll talk about what the three other justices dissenting vigorously from this decision have said. I'm going to provide you with some specific language that underscores not only the significance of this decision, but the outrage not only that the Supreme Court justices articulate, but that you should likewise feel resulting from this Supreme Court decision. Again, a decision that is in place now, even while the underlying litigation, the underlying challenges to this goes on. It is not yet resolved. And we'll talk about the notion of irreparable harm and what the justices dissenting from this decision, saying they're violently disagreeing with it, what they have said in words that we can all, should all be able to embrace, regardless of partisan perspective, regardless of political viewpoint. This is a decision, a latest decision from the Supreme Court, of not only great import, but should be a profound concern to all Americans whose information is now accessible by virtue of the law coming out of the Supreme Court, giving these government representatives who do not have the expertise, who do not have not had the access previously to this information, all of that now by virtue of what the Supreme Court did just this past week, time permitting. And we want to make certain that you've got an opportunity to weigh in. We'll also talk about some other things in lower court decisions. Another judge reinstating the president's ban on AmeriCorps. This is a part of our continuing segment called Injunction Function of the Federal District Courts. And yes, another judge once again blocking Donald Trump's attempt to ban foreign students' enrollment at Harvard. That injunction function continues to move apace here in the United States. We'll talk about all of that and more as Amicus Law Review goes forward here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
A new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed two election bills May 2nd, one of which includes provisions for poll workers to challenge the citizenship of voters in the polling place, a ban on ranked choice voting, and a higher bar for third parties. Among several new provisions, House File 954 authorizes state election officials to access federal agency databases and gives local election officials authority to challenge citizenship of a registered voter at the polls. A recent presidential executive order now allows access to those databases. If a voter is not able to provide documentation at the polls, they would be forced to use a provisional ballot. Only days before the 2024 election, the Secretary of State's office challenged the eligibility of over 2,100 registered voters. Most were naturalized citizens or data errors, while 277 were registered non-citizens. Of those, only 35 voted out of 1.7 million ballots cast. Pro-voter groups argue such mass challenges intimidate legitimate naturalized citizens from voting. Two provisions in 954 attempt to protect major party power. It bans ranked choice voting for any election in Iowa and raises the bar for third parties to field candidates. Third parties now need to garner 2% of the vote in three consecutive elections to qualify for the ballot. We have more on HF 954 at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
The soap scientists have found a way to incorporate Sydney Sweeney's actual bathwater into the soap. What if she doesn't smell good? I know she's beautiful.
It smells terrible.
What if she stinks? And no one is going to tell her that because she's Sydney Sweeney. Here's an open invitation to Sydney Sweeney. Come by the Nightlight Studios. I'll smell you and let you know if this is a good product.
Maybe drop off,
and give us a few bucks.
Yeah. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel. Thank you for joining me and my producer here on our weekend broadcast talking about all things rule of law related. You can be a part of our communications, our discussion about these major issues in the rule of law, the delivery of justice and government operations by calling in to our studio at 855-752-4842, or drop us a line, drop us a question, a comment, an inquiry to participate in this continuing important discussion about the role of our government in a time of crisis in America. Let's get right to it. You know well from our previous discussions and your own consumption of the news that since mid-March, issues related to the deportation of various people do not have to be citizens of the United States of America to get the protections of our Constitution, including due process. The deportations of people from this country, arrested, transported by plane to other nations, other countries, absent the due process that they are entitled to get, as the Supreme Court and lower court judges have consistently said. Among those judges who have told the government repeatedly, you need to provide these people with due process before you do this, are Judge James Boasberg of the District Court in the District of Columbia, Judge Paula Zinnes of the District Court in the District of of Maryland. She is the one who has specifically been presiding over this very famous case involving Kilmer Armando Abrego Garcia. More on that coming up. Another judge, Stephanie Gallagher, she is also in Maryland. She has likewise had her hair on fire, appropriately so, angry at the Department of Justice, as our judges Boasberg and Zinnes, because they're not complying with the directives. They're not providing the basic information that a judge can properly demand of litigants in front of her or him. They are in contempt of what the courts are directing, and the judges have come to the edge of saying just that. And have in fact found probable cause to believe, as Judge Boasberg has, that indeed the government is purposely thwarting, not responding to, not obeying the rules, the directives of a federal judge. That is the reason why, among others, that we are undeniably in a crisis of constitutional dimension. Added to that, Judge Brian Murphy, also hair on fire, equally saying to the litigants in front of him, and yes, their attorneys representing your Department of Justice, refusing to tell the judge where those deportees, their eight in particular, where they are in the face of the planet, and why it is that they were transported presumably to places not of their country of origin without even providing them with the notice that the law passed by the Congress requires. All of that in summary history of an awful lot of litigation history in recent weeks. Coming back now to Judge Boasberg. A lot of history preceding this past week. Judge Boasberg, in his latest hearing, full of patience, full of giving the Department of Justice, your government, a huge amount of latitude for 3 months now in failing to provide him what he wants. He finally says this past Wednesday that he has had enough. It's undeniably a bombshell ruling because of what he has found with respect to the conduct of your government, of your attorney general, of your Department of Justice. He holds that the Trump administration, in his words, plainly deprived migrants of their constitutional rights by sending them to that prison in El Salvador without due process under the Alien Enemies Act. What in specifically does Judge Boasberg now say in his latest hearing of just this past week? He is at the end of his rope, and he's letting the government know about it while he is even giving them more of an opportunity to remedy this. Here's what he says. He says, as is now clear, the prison members, he's making reference to this CECOT class of prisoners now in El Salvador, were entitled to notice and an opportunity to challenge their removability pursuant to the proclamation. He goes on to say this in a 69-page order. This is not the kind of thing that we're getting out of the Supreme Court these days, which is nothing. This is a district court judge who is completely transparent, telling us exactly the reason why he's doing what he's doing. The Judge Boasberg goes on to say that process, which was improperly withheld, must now be afforded to them. If you've not been clear in the past, government, be clear now. Boasberg gave the administration one more week, to tell the court how it planned to facilitate the migrants' ability to contest their summary absent due process removals under the Alien Enemies Act, making him the first federal judge among all of these, to rule on the fate of these men since they were deported on March 15th in defiance of his court orders of that day and since that time. Judge Boasberg goes on to say this, that while his prescribed remedy may implicate sensitive diplomatic or national security concerns, which is what the government has said in response to much of Judge Boasberg's directive to them to comply, such issues, he says, fail to surmount the executive branch's constitutional duty to do what? To make good the wrong done. To make good the wrong done by depriving these migrants, these Venezuelans, of their rights. He's borrowing from a phrase in a very famous 1946 Supreme Court case called Bell versus Hood, making good on what was previously wrong. Regarding those issues, the judge directed the administration, your attorney general, to submit proposals detailing how the Department of Justice, plans to provide these men with the means to challenge their incarceration. What are you going to do, Pam Bondi, to abide by the law? goes on to say, mindful of national security and foreign policy concerns, the court will not, at least yet, order the government to take any specific steps, once again giving them a whole lot of latitude after 3 months of a great deal of latitude. Judge goes on to say it will instead allow defendants to submit proposals regarding the appropriate actions that would allow plaintiffs, those are the migrants, those are the people in that prison, to actually seek habeas relief. In short, he says the government must facilitate the habeas corpus relief to contest the removal under the act and must do that promptly. When we come back, I'll tell you more about that decision of the judge. We'll get to the Abrego Garcia indictment and what your attorney general said about that piece of this rule of law issue when Amicus, a law review, continues.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The sound in Los Angeles Friday, where police used tear gas to disperse demonstrators. The group was protesting citywide immigration enforcement action. More than 40 people were taken into custody. Mayor Karen Bass criticized the federal immigration tactics.
It happened multiple places in the city, and what it does is that it sows a sense of terror throughout the community.
Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the Maryland man mistakenly deported by the Trump administration to El Salvador, is back in the U.S., but he's back in federal custody, facing two federal counts linked to a human smuggling ring. His attorney called the charges preposterous. President Trump told reporters Friday he's not interested in talking to Elon Musk as the two continue their high-profile falling out. And two people in custody in connection with what authorities say was a plot to carry out a shooting at a high school graduation in Michigan. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Brewers take on the Padres. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. Game 2 of a 3-game series is tonight in Milwaukee between the Brewers and the San Diego Padres. Last night, the Brewers shut out 2-0. Milwaukee with just 4 hits and several times leaving 2 men on with 2 outs, unable to score any runs. Manager Pat Murphy.
We leave 10 on base. That's a tough go. When you don't score and leave 10 on base, you know, there was some opportunities there. But, you know, Churio hits the ball on the barrel 4 times and gets 1 hit. We didn't get the timely hit. Give them credit. They executed and they got the big home run when they needed it.
A special guest, Packers rookie wide receiver Matthew Golden, on hand to throw out the first pitch. Over 32,000 fans in attendance. In La Crosse, Wisconsin, it's the state high school track and field meet in Division I. Grady Len from De Pere ran the 1,600-meter race in just 4 minutes and 1.7 seconds, setting a new state record. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly sunny, 79. Slight chance of a thunderstorm this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 56. Showers and storms are likely for Sunday with a high near 76. Sunday night, clear, 52. Showers and storms return for Monday.
It's 64 at our studios.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
We are not perfect here at Civic Media. Far be it. Certainly not perfect at this show. But one thing I can assure you of, our owner that I can see right through this glass right now, Sage Weil, has never once told me what to say and encourages us to speak the truth. And that's why, above all else, I'm proud to work for this company. And along with my colleagues, we will bring you what's really happening out there. And if we get it wrong along the way, we'll admit to that and correct ourselves as well.
Catch the Todd Albaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Lily Roberts, she is from the Center for American Progress Action Fund.
They're trying to pretend that this bill would be good for the working class because of this really small carve out to our tax laws. The no tax on tips piece does not at all even come close to addressing the problem of wages in this country. You know, a third of workers who work for tips in the first place don't make enough money to pay taxes at all.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
John Peterson and Gordy Young.
On our next show, it's the return of Pam Jahnke.
And we have a little bit more of the Elon, Trump, and John and Gordy dispute being covered nationwide.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday mornings 6 till 8.
This is Amicus Law Review. My name is Jim Santel, here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media, talking necessarily about the major stories of this past week, including perhaps at the top of the list, although it is often difficult to rank order them, given what has happened this past week. Talking specifically once again about deportees, those 250 or so deported on March 15th without due process, sent to El Salvador, incurring by virtue of the non-responsiveness and contemptuous behavior of the U.S. Department of Justice, the ire and the anger of Judge James Boasberg, who is frustrated beyond words with what the government has not done this past week, saying that he is now going to craft at least a way forward, telling the government that the petitioners, the plaintiffs here in this case, the deportees, do in fact have a right to habeas corpus relief, and saying this in light of the well-established law of remedies and the example that has already been set by all three levels of the federal judiciary. He's talking about the fact that the Supreme Court, the appeals court, the district court have all said unanimously, due process, due process, due process. Defendants, and that is your government. Those are the secretaries sitting around the cabinet table, have to facilitate the plaintiff's ability to proceed through habeas corpus proceedings, challenging their detention, and ensure that their cases are handled as they would have been if the government, here we go, had not provided constitutionally inadequate process, the judge writes. The court determines that such a remedy balances the defendant's distinct role in conducting foreign affairs with the grave need to right their legal wrongs. Absent that relief, Judge Boasberg says the government could snatch anyone off the street, turn him over to a foreign country, and then effectively foreclose any corrective course of action. Those are strong words. Those are strong words coming from any federal district court judge, those of just days ago. Needless to say, the government, your administration, the White House, responds as they have done before. A deputy press secretary named Abigail Jackson stunningly refutes the Constitution by saying this: Judge Boasberg has no authority to intervene with immigration or national security, authority that rests squarely with the President Trump and the executive branch. His current and previous attempts to prevent President Trump from deporting criminal illegal aliens poses a direct threat to the safety of the American people. Fortunately for the American people, Judge Boasberg does not have the last word. Well, that's the only thing she said that is true, because indeed all of this will once again be subject to appeal, probably going back to the Supreme Court at some point down the road when all these cases, including the case involving before Judge Zinnes, involving Abrego Garcia, the case in front of Judge Gallagher, Judge Murphy, all of them are coming back one day to the Supreme Court for further enforcement. The fundamental takeaway with respect to what the White House has said is that it is simply wrong. Regardless of your view about international matters, whether deportations are right or wrong in particular instances, that's what the point is. That's due process. And she is simply wrong in saying, as has our Attorney General, that a federal district court judge has no power to act. That is contrary to what James Madison wrote in our Constitution, and the White House should know better. Maybe they need some civics training. Our Attorney General plainly does, but they continue not only to say those things in violation of the law, regardless of your political persuasion, your partisan viewpoint. We must all agree that judges have a role to play. The fact that as late as this past week, the White House continues to promote this notion that the Constitution gives the president unbridled authority to do things simply wrong. What has happened in connection with the Abrego Garcia case? Perhaps one of the biggest rule of law stories in this past week. You know well, we're going to review right now the indictment, the federal grand jury indictment issued out of the Middle District of Tennessee. We'll get to the reason why it comes from that district in just a moment or so. The Middle District of Tennessee, the Nashville Division, United States of America versus Kilmer Armando Abrego Garcia, an indictment under four different sections of Title 8 of the United States Code, an indictment returned by a federal grand jury. As we've talked before, these are somewhere approaching, if not at, 23 people who determine whether or not there's probable cause to believe that crimes have been committed. A proper indictment returned by a grand jury coming out of that district just this past week, announced by our Attorney General. And before this hour is out, we're going to hear expressly from our Attorney General. Important to hear from her because of the things that she says, the way that she describes this indictment, the things that she does not say about the presumption of innocence that still attends Mr. Abrego Garcia in the wake of this indictment, the things that she does say that are not in this indictment, additional allegations now in the public domain to sully the very movement forward of this case. What does the indictment say? What are the four corners of this 10-page indictment? It is structured somewhat oddly, candidly, but nonetheless, in broad strokes and in some specifics, it describes that from 2016 to about 2025, as late as this year, Kilmer Armando Abrego Garcia and others known to the grand jury, many other co-conspirators identified just by names, by letters, and by numbers, not by specific names in this indictment, conspired to bring undocumented aliens to the United States from countries like Guatemala and El Salvador and Honduras, Ecuador, and elsewhere, ultimately passing through Mexico before crossing into Texas. And the indictment alleges that they did all this with these undocumented aliens without authorization to enter the United States of America. A lot about this illegal transportation accomplished by, allegedly, by Abrego Garcia and these co-conspirators identified as CC1, CC2, CC3, CC4, and CC5. They note that Abrego Garcia and all these others were citizens of El Salvador. Interestingly, surplusage in this indictment that they were not United States citizens. Perhaps once again, the author of this indictment on behalf of the grand jury, once again, missing the point that whether you're a citizen or not, you're entitled to due process. But nonetheless, that's in paragraph 4 early on in this indictment, alleging as well, oh, by the way, something that has been out there for a while now in an indictment, that Mr. Abrego Garcia was in fact a part of a transnational criminal organization known as MS-13. This criminal enterprise engages again in a laundry list of things like murder and extortion, narcotics trafficking, firearms trafficking, alien smuggling, money laundering, all kinds of things in this indictment. Goes on to say in count one, which is under section 1324 of Title 8, called conspiracy to transport aliens, coming out once again of the Middle District of Tennessee. Hold on to that for just a moment. But all of these folks, the conspirators, along with Mr. Abrego Garcia, acted illegally
enabling these folks to cross into the United States, into Texas, without inspection. CC6, one of these co-conspirators, was the primary sources of supply of undocumented aliens for the conspiracy. Lots of things about other co-conspirators in addition to Armando Garcia, talks a lot about these undocumented aliens, once again, coming from Texas to other parts of the United States of America, and that all of these co-conspirators, of course, acted together. Noting, for example, that CC1 was released from prison and deported. CC1 illegally re-entered the United States. Some information about these other co-conspirators. We hear as well about the transportation of firearms illegally purchased in Texas for distribution and resale in where? In Maryland. We talk again about these undocumented aliens being transported with the firearms. Also, along with narcotics purchased in Texas for distribution in other places. Interesting conversation in this indictment, sort of a talking indictment, about the use of cash for facilitating the transport through the United States of these various people improperly here. Transported generally and throughout the United States, interestingly, reporting that some of the co-conspirators refused to pay for the transportation services, but the gang members and the associates of Mr. Abrego Garcia transported, generally treated many of these folks with respect and also paid for his transportation services. An interesting reference to the relationship among them, again, indicating that the MS-13 members and associates of Abrego Garcia transported generally treated Abrego Garcia with respect, suggesting, of course, that he may have been at the head of this conspiracy. Additional language related again to the thousands of dollars of criminal proceeds derived from this conspiracy, making some blithe references to wire fraud, perhaps along the way, to obscure the recipient's money. Also talking perhaps about money laundering itself as this cash and other sources of income are distributed. Talking about the fact that the group took the undocumented aliens' cellular telephones from them when they transported them throughout the United States, providing them back to the undocumented aliens at the end of the trip, saying they did this to ensure that the aliens could not and would not contact anyone else during the trip. They describe the fact that much of this transportation was done in an unsafe manner. They talk about a repeated reference to aftermarket unattached seating rows in some of the vehicles, transporting children on the floorboards of vehicles in order to maximize profits here. There's references to luggage that were being used just crossing the border, false cover stories being maintained about a construction job that was, in fact, according to the allegations in the indictment, not real. References to one of the co-conspirators, CC6, his criminal activities involving the transportation of more than 150 migrants that ended when the tractor trailer carrying them overturned in Mexico, resulting in the deaths of 50 of them. That attributed to this particular co-conspirator. And by virtue of the conspiracy law in America, if indeed Mr. Abrego Garcia is, as alleged, a part of this conspiracy, that too can be imputed to him. Other occasions throughout this, making reference to, interestingly, the abuse of Mr. Abrego Garcia of some of the female undocumented aliens. Knowing that this was bad for business, one of the co-conspirators reported these allegations of abuse, and Abrego Garcia apparently stopped. Again, according to the allegations, reference to 100 trips between Texas and Maryland, and finally this reference to Tennessee, a stop that happens on November 30th of 2022, a state trooper stopping along the Texas highway there, I-40 in Putnam County, Tennessee. At the time, the traffic stop captured on video, Abrego Garcia is the driver of a Suburban, according to the allegations. 9 additional passengers there along the way. According to the indictment, knowingly and falsely telling that state trooper that all these folks were coming from St. Louis, falsely stating that they had been there for 2 weeks doing some construction work, some representations that, in fact, that is not true. There's once again a reference to an aftermarket third row of seats placed where a cargo area should have been occupied by undocumented passengers. All of that in this indictment, along with forfeiture allegations. When we come back in our final segment, what did our attorney general say about all this? What did she say? What did she not say? And why is that hugely important as this case proceeds, as we continue to talk here on Amicus, a law review.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You know Ignite Glass and Gifts' three locations in Madison, but you can also shop igniteglassandgifts.com. You'll find grinders, lighters, collectibles, hand-blown glass water pipes, artistically designed jewelry, and plenty of other items delivered straight to your door or to family and friends. Madison's favorite for glass, gifts, and vape, Ignite Glass and Gifts, Monona Drive, Williamson Street, and Odana Road, plus igniteglassandgifts.com.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In discussions over the so-called Big Beautiful Bill backed by Donald Trump that's making its way through Congress, none other than Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson has emerged as the most prominent Republican critic of the bill, saying at a recent Milwaukee Press Club event that it is, quote, not even close to adequate. Johnson has said he wants spending cuts to go even further, including making cuts to Medicaid. But Johnson's position as a critic of this bill makes him especially influential in these negotiations. But let's not forget the last time he was in a similar position. In 2017, he was a critic of the Trump tax cut bill, but what he fought for was a tax break for certain types of businesses, perhaps not coincidentally, businesses owned by his largest donors, Dick and Liz Uline. In 2018 alone, the Ulines received more than $200 million in tax breaks because of this bill. So as the Big Beautiful Bill is negotiated in the Senate, let's not forget this piece of recent history.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed two election bills May 2nd, one of which includes provisions for poll workers to challenge the citizenship of voters in the polling place, a ban on ranked choice voting, and a higher bar for third parties. Among several new provisions, House File 954 authorizes state election officials to access federal agency databases and gives local election officials authority to challenge citizenship of a registered voter at the polls. A recent presidential executive order now allows access to those databases. If a voter is not able to provide documentation at the polls, they would be forced to use a provisional ballot. Only days before the 2024 election, the Secretary of State's office challenged the eligibility of over 2,100 registered voters. Most were naturalized citizens or data errors, while 277 were registered non-citizens. Of those, only 35 voted out of 1.7 million ballots cast. Pro-voter groups argue such mass challenges intimidate legitimate naturalized citizens from voting. Two provisions in 954 attempt to protect major party power. It bans ranked choice voting for any election in Iowa and raises the bar for third parties to field candidates. Third parties now need to garner 2% of the vote in three consecutive elections to qualify for the ballot. We have more on HF 954 at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Amicus, a law review. My name is Jim Santel. For the remainder of this hour and also next hour, as we talk about the rule of law in America, and yes, indeed, the things that the chief federal law enforcement officer for the United States says and does not say about this major indictment against Kilmer Armando Abrego Garcia, returned by a federal grand jury, establishing probable cause to believe that he committed many, many crimes, including conspiracy, that, of course, to be the subject of what? A trial where that will be determined by a jury in a federal district court, presumably in the Middle District of Tennessee, by virtue of this stop, this patrol stop that happened, also described in this indictment. Let's listen to what our attorney general said about this indictment, the return of Abrego Garcia to this country to face that charges. And as you listen to this, ask yourself, where is the statement about his presumption of innocence? As we say about every single other defendant who is charged in a federal court, ask yourself whether she is remaining within the four corners of this indictment. Ask yourself what she says and what she does not say about what is indeed charged against Mr. Abrego Garcia. This on Friday, from the Department of Justice, Maine Justice in Washington, D.C., my attorney general, your attorney general, Pam Bondi, announcing what justice means in America under this administration. Pamela Bondi.
Good afternoon. We're here today to announce a major update in an important case. Abrego Garcia has landed in the United States to face justice. On May 21st, a grand jury in the Middle District of Tennessee returned a sealed indictment charging Abrego Garcia with alien smuggling and conspiracy to commit alien smuggling in violation of Title 8 U.S.C. 1324. We want to thank President Bukele for agreeing to return Abrego Garcia to the United States. Our government presented El Salvador with an arrest warrant, and they agreed to return him to our country. We're grateful to President Bukele for agreeing to return him to our country to face these very serious charges. This is what American justice looks like. Upon completion of his sentence, we anticipate he will be returned to his home country of El Salvador. The grand jury found that over the past 9 years, Abrego Garcia has played a significant role in an alien smuggling ring. They found this was his full-time job, not a contractor. He was a smuggler of humans and children and women. He made over 100 trips, the grand jury found, smuggling people throughout our country, MS-13 members, violent gang, terrorist organization members throughout our country. Thousands of illegal aliens were smuggled. This is especially disturbing because Abrego Garcia is also alleged with transporting minor children. The defendant traded the innocence of minor children for profit. There are even more disturbing facts that the grand jury uncovered. It is alleged this defendant is part of the same smuggling ring responsible for the death of more than 50 migrants in 2021 after the tractor trailer overturned in Mexico. This is part of that same ring. The defendant abused undocumented alien females, according to co-conspirators, who were under his control while transporting them throughout our country. This defendant trafficked firearms and narcotics throughout our country on multiple occasions. They were using vehicles, SUVs, with added seats in the back, floors that had been ripped out, guns, narcotics, children, women, MS-13 members. That is what the grand jury found. A co-conspirator alleged that the defendant solicited nude photographs and videos of a minor. A co-conspirator also alleges the defendant played a role in the murder of a rival gang member's mother. These facts demonstrate Abrego Garcia is a danger to our community. We want to thank the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, our state and local partners, our acting U.S. Attorney Robert McGuire, and prosecutors from the Joint Task Force Vulcan. Questions?
The traffic stop that we've seen video of from Tennessee, where Abrego Garcia was first identified by the local authorities, at the time, the Homeland Security Department declined to take custody of him. What has happened in between that time and in between the time that the government has been arguing that he was not returnable from El Salvador? What has happened since in this investigation that brought you here?
Yes, the question was, in 2021, there was the traffic stop. And what has changed since then? What has changed is Donald Trump is now president of the United States, and our borders are again secure. And thanks to the bright light that has been shined on Abrego Garcia, this investigation continued with actually amazing police work. And we were able to track this case and stop this international smuggling ring from continuing.
Recently found facts.
To
that point, can you just explain when this investigation was opened? The investigation in Tennessee, can you say when that investigation was opened?
Well, the grand jury indicted on May 21st. This investigation has been ongoing.
There is so very much to unpack in connection with those statements made by my attorney general, your attorney general, all about the things that she did not say. No statement about a presumption of innocence and representations not in the indictment, also stated by my attorney general. In the top of our second hour, we'll take those apart. We'll talk about those as our discussion here continues of rule of law, things related to deportations and also the United States Supreme Court here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Overnight, Elon Musk removed posts on X, the social media site that he owns that was formerly Twitter. The removed post saw Musk endorse the idea of impeaching President Donald Trump amid their rapidly developing feud. ABC's Alex Brochet says that feud could be entering a new phase.
By Friday afternoon, Trump was downplaying the feud, saying, "I'm not thinking about Elon Musk. I just wish him well." And overnight, Musk responding likewise. As for Doge, the president says the White House would be taking over a lot of their work and that many of the agency's employees will remain throughout the federal government.
Kilmar Abrego Garcia, the Maryland man mistakenly deported to a prison in El Salvador, is back in the U.S., but in federal custody. He's facing federal charges in connection to an alleged human smuggling ring. His lawyer called the charges preposterous. And more than 40 people taken into custody Friday in federal immigration action in Los Angeles. That prompted protests.